Welcome to a psychodelicious conversation on mental health issues and trends from three local mental health professionals in the greater Lansing area. I'm Michael Stratton, LMSW.
And I'm Morgan Bowen, PMHNP.
And I'm Melissa Black, PMHNP, and we're here to provide you with a deep dive into the human experience of consciousness and beyond.
Our aim is to be educational and entertaining, so just kick back and open your ears and your minds.
Hey, I'm Michael Stratton.
And I'm Morgan Bowen.
And I'm Melissa Black.
Dedalion here, too.
All right. Hi, Dedalion.
This is part two of our talk about dreams, and it's interesting because there's a couple things I want to say right off the top. One is Sophie. Okay.
She's one of our video folks.
Yeah, she came in during the break wanted to talk about a dream, and I think there's something about this that captures people's attention because mm-hmm. there's so much mystery with dreams, mm-hmm. and so much of our lives are in these grids. You know, we want it to have some stability and some predictability. Morgan, you came in talking about being bummed out because you couldn't work out. I talked about I missed my yoga class yesterday. It was so upsetting to miss this. Mm-hmm. You know, the structure gets interrupted. But then at night, it's like we're not in the city anymore. We go into the forest. Mm-hmm. And it's mysterious, and we don't know what could be out there, and we don't know what strange animals there are. We don't know what that noise means. And I think that's the area of dreams and dream work. And so much of dream work is mm-hmm. about, let's make this predictable, let's understand this. And I'm like, I think we should keep it a little bit wild. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that we need to keep the forest being the forest and live with the mystery a little bit as well, of just appreciating, like, boy, there's a whole bunch of stuff that we don't completely understand, that we don't totally mm-hmm. get about our lives, but that our subconscious is trying to give us clues about it and coming to it over and over and over again, you know, these recurring ideas.
It's such an important part of the human experience. And, you know, I'm thinking art and creativity and movies and just different art forms try to tap into that, or at least in part. I mean, that, and so I'm thinking about movies and experiences, watching movies in particular. I love film, where you come away with that feeling of mystery, or just like it, just when it connects with you in that way, that feels almost like you are in a dream space, or that mm-hmm. And that good dream space where it's things are just exciting but connected. And then I was also thinking that there's a whole industry of drug use that
tries to create.
Yes, I think I think at least in part, you know, the usage of drugs is an attempt to tap into some type of experience that touches or borders on that space.
So if you could jump in here, Inception.
Which I don't condone.
Inception's the movie immediately thought of.
Inception is about dreams and dreams inside of dreams and people going in and being able to go into each other's dreams, that kind of thing. But weirdly, the talk that I was giving at Creativity and Madness was, it's about creativity and madness, so, you know, mental health and mm-hmm. also creativity. Mm-hmm. So they appreciate it when you talk about a particular artist. And I use the artist Akira Kurosawa.
He's one of my favorite artists.
And the title of the talk was Kurosawa Creating an Unconscious Autobiography. Mm-hmm. And he made a movie towards the end of his life called Dreams, Akira Kurosawa's Dreams. And he, his most famous movie was Seven Samurai, I think. Mm-hmm. But he made several that were very impactful. A lot of filmmakers really see him as a source, you know, somebody that really helped him. But anyway,
who is the artist married to? Bjork. Bjork was married to...
Not Kurosawa.
No, it was not Kurosawa, but also does a lot of different multimedia work, but film and very much.
I can't believe I don't have that stored in my brain.
We're going to have Dedalion look it up. But I went to see one of the films, and it was probably in 2005 or so, and it was very much a strange, bizarre. There was whales and a whaling ship and Bjork.
Dancer in the Dark?
No, it wasn't Dancer in the Dark. It was... But anyway, it was a very bizarre, strange
That's no, not it, is it?
No, it was after him.
Surrealism. I mean, that's a form of art that is, you know, depicts kind of dreamscapes in a way. But what Kurosawa did was that he took eight dreams that he'd had, eight significant dreams that he'd had in his life, and he filmed them. And then you got a chance to kind of get a sense of who he was, what he cared about, what his values were, what his conflicts were, what scared him, all of those kinds of things. You coming up with a Bjork's
We're
husband.
All reading through a Wikipedia page.
I don't even know how many times she's Matthew been married. Matthew Barney.
Yes, that's
Is
it.
That
Matthew
it?
Barney.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Matthew Barney.
I saw a partner there, so I didn't know if that was official then.
Maybe they weren't actually married, but
okay.
He's got some weird stuff.
So
thank you, Wikipedia.
Yes.
So when I would do a dream group, it was fairly structured. It was like 16 weeks long. And the first week would just be like, let's develop the picture of your dream. So it would be, keep a dream journal. We're not going to do any interpretations at all. We're just going to see what the picture looks like. Do you dream in black and white or do you dream in color? I think most people dream in color now. I think when people watched black and white movies, people were tending to dream in
Is
black
that
and
true?
White.
Oh, I haven't heard that. That's so interesting.
Then are you looking at the dream like this? Are you a character in the dream or are you looking at it from first person? Are you the omniscient narrator? Is it really clear or does it feel really jumbled? When people keep a journal like that, their dreams, like within a week or two, just start to pop. They start to remember them really clearly. They remember a lot more detail. It stays with them. And then, you know, we kind of sequentially move through. And one of the really fascinating things, and then I'll be quiet for a while, is that when you do a dream group and someone reports dreams over the course of like 3 or 4 months, if you go back through them, it's not so much the imagery itself, but the process that the person's in. I'm always driving. I'm always running. I'm always fighting. I'm always being chased. I'm always wondering. I feel lost. I'm always, you know, you just see this recurring activity that mirrors some sense that they have about themselves in their lives at this moment. So it's kind of capturing the poetry of your existence in a way that's a little bit different. I don't know. What does that sound like to you guys? It's weird or?
No, I think that seems congruent with like my personal experience for sure. Now that I'm like reflecting on it and thinking about it, like either being overwhelmed or, you know, feeling lost.
Yeah.
I could write poems about those things.
And you do.
And I do.
You do. You have a very creative vibe, creative part to your life. It's more than a vibe.
I thought it was going to be everything. It was very surprising to me to go into science, but what I love about nursing and psychiatry both together and separate is that there is an art to it and you do use you know, intuition and you're using your empathy. And in my mind it is like still, I hesitate to use the word spiritual, but it seems more than, you know, drugs.
I think it goes to that. Yeah, it goes to, I think, the human experience. I mean, there is something that is mystical or supernatural comes to mind, but that's not the right word. Something, you know, otherworldly to consciousness that you can't just, you know, explain away with cells and, you know, processes and things. At least I don't think so. So there is something to it. You know, my father was a psychiatrist. He was really into myth and Joseph Campbell in particular, Heart of Darkness. That was one of his big things, which, you know, there is some central core. And for him, you know, and I think for a lot of people, this good versus evil kind of dynamic, or that's at the base of consciousness, and that type of thing comes through in different ways and throughout people's lives. I mean, in very tangible ways, decision making and things that you have to do, but also I would say an imagery with consciousness. So I'm trying to think of how that plays in my life and dreams and things. But just generally, I think humans are attracted to that space, maybe some more than others.
People are complicated.
Well, and the unknown, you know, I've lived my whole life with a lot of anxiety and I've done all different types of therapies and treatments. What has become really consistent is like, okay, anxiety underneath it, there's some sort of fear of the unknown. One of the ways I've tried to approach it once I can get through different symptoms or whatever is like, how can I find comfort in the unknown? Mm-hmm. How can I like find connection with others in the unknown? Like, mm-hmm. it really is like a comforting thing to me to think like, well, nobody knows what's really happening. Like, nobody knows what's really, who knows? But like, isn't this fun and interesting? And I think finding meaning is, at least for me, a very valuable part of being a human.
You know, it's triggering for me. I'm thinking about a couple of different dreams I had. One was based in anxiety, and then the other one is like a resolution of anxiety. Back when I did The Vinyl Side of Midnight, and I'm pointing back to the mm-hmm. where the studio used to be, one dream I would have is that I would come in and the board was like a sheet of glass. It was a sheet of black glass. And Roots Mom Bird would be leaving and said, they made some changes. Bye. Bye. I'd see it getting close to 9 o'clock. I'd be like, what? What? What's going to happen? You know, and I would say, you know, it's counting down. It's like, I had no idea. There's no place to put the seat. It's like, ah. And so that was always an anxiety dream because that was one area that would really tested me that I had to learn this technology that I didn't really feel like I was an expert at all. And, mm-hmm. and occasionally things could turn off. But the other one that I've had more recently, which is a recurring dream, is I'll be someplace often on vacation and I'll walk by like a classroom or even like a lecture hall. And I'll realize like, oh God, I'm supposed to go in there and give a talk. And I can, I walk in there and I'm able to give the talk. And so it's like a dream of mastery. It's like it's reminding myself, like, you got this, you know? You don't have to worry about this anymore. This is all understandable. There was a time in my life where that would have been an anxiety dream. Mm. But I feel like I know what I'm talking about more often than not, usually.
Mm. So
that's like a mega growth dream. That shows a lot of growth.
Melissa's saying that she tends to be an anxious person. And I mean, you've known me long enough. I don't think that I'm particularly anxious, but most of my dreams seem to be maybe just the anxiety that I'm bearing. I don't know. I rarely have a beautiful dream where I'm like, I wake up and I go, wow, that was awesome. Mm-hmm. It's usually an anxious dream. I can even remember, I've had actually some of the similar on-air dreams that you have had. So mm-hmm. not to that extent or having a completely blacked out
black glass
mixer there. But I very often will have work dreams, I know, mm-hmm. that are anxiety-based. I actually had a dream as a young man when I was in college, and I worked at Burger King at the time. I probably shouldn't have said Burger King, but BK. I worked at a fast food restaurant. And
love it your way.
And I was there all alone, and I had to keep running to the back, making sandwiches, and then running to the front, taking to, you know, the customers, going to the drive-thru. So I kept having to do this. All the time that this was happening, there was a sniper shooting at me.
Oh, wow.
And so I'd have to go around the corner but avoid the sniper. Yeah, weird.
Was it like a video game?
It was like a video game, and it hadn't happened yet. But at the time, the particular store that I worked at kept getting robbed. Mm. And eventually, I think we've talked about this on this episode.
Mm-hmm. We did.
I was held at gunpoint. So.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It was weird.
Maybe you're like an oracle.
Right, precognition. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like you saw the danger coming, and then indeed it happened.
I'm going to say no.
Don't go to Dedalia. Dedalia is not an oracle.
The weird part was is when the actual robbery was happening, I wasn't that nervous.
Because you'd been through it already.
I'd never been through that before.
I mean, in your dreams.
It was much worse, too. Yeah. He was a sniper shooting at me.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. This guy.
I used to wait tables and did so for quite a long time in my 20s.
I had those dreams, too.
And I mean, it's very common for servers to have the dream where you're at work and, you know, there's nobody, your whole section is full and you're the only person working and everybody needs something and you're... Yeah, I remember those dreams. I don't have them anymore, or at least not that I remember, but...
I recently had another dream. This happened a lot when I worked on the adult psych unit, but where I was in the ICA the intensive care area on that unit, and I couldn't convince them that I worked there. And I couldn't leave. And
sure, you work here.
Get back in your room.
I like tried to go into the nurses' station. I got pushed out. I mean, all things that I had absolutely.
Zyprexa, yeah. Stat. Three out of the four of us at this table have worked in that exact area.
Yes.
You know, God, that would be terrifying.
It was not. I was like, oh, okay. I guess I'm still processing some of that trauma from being in that environment.
So I suppose generally, I mean, most people remember the more anxiety-based dreams than.
You know what's interesting? I think that your brain stores your dreams in a certain area. Even if I started out, well, I did start out, say, tell me about a dream. You've remembered, everybody at this table has remembered like five or six other dreams that they wouldn't have accessed. Yeah. It's like someone coming to you and say, tell me a joke.
Yeah.
And it's like, let me think about it. But if you hear two or three jokes, all of a sudden you got a dozen jokes
in your
mouth.
Yes.
I've definitely had the dream where you lose your teeth. Have you guys ever had that dream?
I have.
Not that I remember.
Yeah, not all of my teeth, but like I've had dreams where it was like just one or two or something. Something's going on. Yeah.
I remember one, and I don't remember the context, but I remember I lost a tooth or a piece of a tooth came out, and I was like, oh, my God. And then I was like, all right, well, at least it was just one. And then another one comes out, and then that just repeats over and over, and increasingly I'm more and more like this, I'm not gonna be able to deal with it. Like I can't hide this or, you know, whatever.
The worst of it is, as we're talking about it, I'm actually struggling and I'm trying to think of one good dream that I've had. And I know I've had them. Mm-hmm. I know I've had good dreams.
That's a good question. Like, have you had any healing dreams? And I'll talk about one that I had. So this is going to sound kind of strange, but my dad, when he died literally 30 years ago, a week ago, I think it's been 30 years and a week now. Mm-hmm. And when he was dying, we knew he was dying. And we had a lot of different talks during that time. And one of the things I said to him, I said, you know, I would be open to you coming to visit me. And he said, okay, I'll try. And I said, okay, well, I'll be waiting up in the cupola on Halloween night the next year. And so I did that.
What's a cupola?
Where's the cupola?
What's a cupola?
Well, the cupola.
Francis Ford Cupola?
This was in Francis Ford Cupola. This was in Grand Ledge. It was right across from Peters and Murray funeral home. And there's a house there with a cupola. So it's contained by glass, and it's
widow's peak, or some people call it a widow's walk.
I guess so. Is it like a
Russian roof? Like the swirly.
It's got some steps that go up.
And
two or three people can sit in it maybe, but it's a small area.
So you're going to meet your dad in the cupola.
Yeah. So I wait for him.
Learning something.
I wait for him on Halloween night. He doesn't show up. And I wait for him.
Is this the dream? Are we still talking about
this?
This is the dream.
This is, this is no. This is really happening now.
Okay.
So anyway, 10 years go by, and one night I have a dream that my dad has left me a Cadillac, and I'm like, oh, this is really cool. So I get in the Cadillac, and when I get into it, I look back, and it's like a mobile home. It goes back. It's like a bus that a band would tour in. There's a big bedroom in the back. I'm going back to the bedroom, and all of a sudden I see, oh, there's steps that go down. And I go down these steps, and it opens up into this huge, expansive area that's got a library, and it's got a recording studio, and all of this music, and all of this stuff. And this is all part of the Cadillac. And I woke up, and I was so happy that he'd left me this. And I realized two things. One was that my dad's legacy, what he really left me, was this legacy of an appreciation for the arts. Mm-hmm. He always wanted to be a writer, and he did some writing before he died. And I've spent so much of my life not just doing therapy, but being involved in the arts in one way or another. And then the second thing that I realized was that it was Halloween night that I had this dream.
Aww.
So 10 years.
He visited you.
10 years to the day.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think he did. I kind of. But anyway, did you have like a healing dream? Have you had like a really good dream, a dream that made you feel?
Yes,
like
I have. I'm trying to think of them. You know, I was thinking of erotic dreams of an erotic nature.
Well, I was just going to ask about that. So what does that typically relate to? Because when that does happen. Those are usually pretty good dreams.
Can I go back to sleep now?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they frequently have it in puberty, you know, start to happen in puberty. And so there's, you know, so I definitely remember that. And I think part of the lore of being a teenager or a preteen, at least when Melissa and I were
teens.
And one question would be, is this a thing for the ladies too? But, you know, you're
it's not as much as like for the boy folks, I don't think, but definitely still there. What I remember most is when those dreams have occurred, it's still, something's always weird. Like it's, there's still something weird going on. So I'm always like trying to like investigate like what is going on, but there's also this other component to the dream which feels befuddling but not necessarily unpleasant.
I think now, like in adulthood, having erotic dreams, yes, like there's, it's a part of a bigger picture and it's odd and weird, but you know, as a teenager, if I can, you know, remember, it was pleasant. And actually being gay, it was kind of something that I definitely like looked forward to, because it was an
escape.
Yeah, it was kind of an escape. So yeah, I would,
that makes sense,
remember going to bed trying to like think, think about, you know, whoever I had a crush on and try to, but I'm thinking that it's kind of, I don't know if I've ever really talked about this. So I'm thinking that that might be common. Mike was Catholic, so I don't know what happened for the Catholic boys, but
we learned about nocturnal emissions.
Yes.
Yeah,
wet dreams, and that those were natural. Don't worry about them. You don't have to confess.
Are those a sin against God? No, those aren't.
No, that was a natural thing, that the body would discharge the evil semen during sleep.
Was that really a thing?
It was. Well, they would talk about nocturnal emissions for sure. That was something we learned about.
I think we still talk about nocturnal emissions. It's a terrible way to nocturnal emissions. Yeah. We should really talk to somebody about changing.
Yes. I was so naive in that area. We have to do a sex episode at some point, I guess.
We do.
Oh, that'll be fun for me to edit.
Well, I have a really healing good dream. I talked a little bit about it on our break, but this has been recurring, and it is a dream that I had not thought of, you know, when we started the episode. And as we were talking through the first episode, you know, it kind of came to me where the first time I had the dream was probably 13 or 14 years old. And I'm walking in this like ancient glen of like giant trees, I think giant boulders. Everything felt very old, like oldest earth. And I looked up and I'm looking in the sky and I don't see anything. There's nothing there, but this unseen force, I feel it in my sternum and my chest, and it's pulling me up into the sky. Now my feeling with it, and the feeling that I've kind of thought about and processed over the last 30 plus years, is whatever my brain's concept of God is, like, this was some like universal force that was like pulling me upward. And it really, really scared me for a long time. But now I see it as like this comforting dream. Like that's also part of the unknown. And it can be great. It might not be. I have no idea. But it's come through in other dreams and meditations that I've done. That same physical sensation, which then reminds me of that dream.
I love it.
That's awesome. And it made me think of, we've talked about Freud and Jung, particularly in the previous episode, but, you know, the idea that Jung had, and please correct me, I think all three of us have an interest in Jung, but was that there's a collective consciousness among the human species, that we all are connected in some way through some type of force, and then that comes through in a collective consciousness where we all have dreams or we have some type of experience like these, where there's, you know, maybe a connection to a very primitive being, or not necessarily like a singular being, but a primitive shared space of humanity.
What if we're one organism? What if the human race is actually one organism and we just don't experience ourselves that way? That would be one way I'd look at it. The other thing that Jung talked about was the shadow, you know, the parts of ourselves that we don't want to admit that we have. So a lot of aggression and stuff like that. I was very conflict avoidant. I'm still not great with conflict, but better now than I used to be. But that I think that had a lot to do with the monsters that I'd be dreaming about when I was a kid. But anyway, so dreams are interesting.
I wanted to give a little bit of a shout out to Station 11. It's a series on HBO that really is very amazing. And in terms of like an art piece of film that really connects with a very dreamlike space.
I was just listening to the soundtrack last night when I was reading. The book is amazing. The series is amazing.
It takes place in Traverse City.
It does. Yeah. Yep.
Watch it.
A Psychodelicious Conversation is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is no substitute for therapy and should not be treated as such. If you feel a need for real therapy, you should consult your local provider, Google Therapy, or therapist in your area. Check your community mental health or a suicide hotline if you are feeling suicidal.
Mike, Morgan, and Melissa welcome your questions, feedback, or dilemmas. Feel free to send your emails to psych.delish@gmail.com. That's psych.delish@gmail.com.
The views expressed on this podcast are solely the opinions of Mike Stratton, Morgan Bowen, and Melissa Black, and do not reflect the views or opinions of any site broadcasting this podcast. Replication of this podcast without written permission is strictly prohibited.